Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Jay Milbrand is a professor at Bethel University in St. Paul, Minnesota. He travels throughout the world as a human rights lawyer. He manages global initiatives in Africa, Southeast Asia, consults with organizations engaged in human rights and legal development. Jay, welcome to LifeQuest.
Dwight, thanks for having me.
Today we're going to talk with you about your book, The Daring Heart of David Livingstone: Exile, African Slavery, and the Publicity Stunt That Saved Millions. At least that's what it says on the front of the book. Jay, I was thinking about this, and I've actually done a questioning of people. I'm an old guy. When I was younger, read books as a kid about David Livingstone, even heard about it in school and sometimes church, Bible school. I'm betting there's not as much familiarity with this character as there were in years past. Is that right?
Well, that's absolutely right. You know, he's a name that we recognize. We don't necessarily know why. And there's that Dr. Livingstone, I presume, line that,
right,
that stuck with us culturally. Well, the last, I would say, half a century or so, the biographers and writers that have given Livingstone time have only focused on his explorations.
Mm-hmm.
And what he discovered and what he was trying to accomplish geographically, for the most part, that wasn't real successful. And so in some ways, they've given him a bad rap. And they've come and they've said, well, he wasn't that great of an explorer, and he mm-hmm. didn't really amount to much. But that's not true. They missed the whole story of why he was there, what he was doing, what the purpose of his life was, and that was ending the slave trade. And we've just missed that.
Jay, can you tell our listeners just a bit of an overview of what was happening there in the early 19th century in Britain as far as sending out explorers and how the people got enthusiastic about this, and also how Britain was involved in the slave trade?
Yeah. Well, this was in the prime of British exploration. You know, the empire was large, covering vast portions of the world, and Britain was very proud of their explorers being the best,
mm-hmm.
going everywhere, being able to get to any place on the planet, conquering land, starting colonies. And we're familiar with the transatlantic slave trade that America was involved in and Britain was involved in. And that ended, and it ended somewhat abruptly because we were able to shut it down as a source. You know, we were the ones who were involved with transporting the slaves and purchasing them. What we don't know is that there was an East African slave trade
mm-hmm.
that really developed out of that, out of the West African slave trade. It disappeared. Well, there was still demand for slaves in Arab lands, in India, and they wanted to buy humans somewhere. And so the slave trade started moving east, and that wasn't a part of the continent that Britain and Western countries had much of a foothold in. So it largely went underneath the radar.
Why did you write this book at this time?
Well, I had no intention of writing this book. It was actually sort of happenstance. I was in Africa doing humanitarian work, and I went over to climb Mount Kilimanjaro.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know, we're climbing up this mountain, and I remember thinking, this must have been what it was like to explore Africa in the when they were first opening it up. You have these
yeah.
long trains of porters. And so I wanted to find a history of that. And so I knew the name Livingstone, that Dr. Livingstone, I presume, and went looking for a biography. And I found this nugget about how he was interested in ending the slave trade. And that was really it. There wasn't anything more that I could find. But I wanted to read more about how this adventurer wanted to abolish slavery. And when I couldn't find that biography or that story, I decided it was time to write it. That it needed to be told, and I think it's a modern analog for our times. You know, we're dealing with human trafficking
yes.
that's happening around the world, and we need it. It happens other places that our government, our country isn't necessarily involved. We don't know if we should intervene in that and other global struggles. And Livingstone was trying to change culture, trying to encourage people to be concerned about this cause, And that is so important for us to hear today and how he did it and how he accomplished it.
What I had no idea about was he had this sort of idealistic idea that the economic advantage of continuing with slavery, which was cotton, in fact, could be done away with if we could raise cotton in Africa, if we could somehow set up some kind of agricultural thing there that would take away the need for slaves. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's right. And that was one of his original intentions. He had this idea that that Africa needed now what is a bit archaic, but what they called civilization, or you know, modern amenities, clean water, things like that. But they needed to accomplish that, they needed Christianity and commerce. Christianity and commerce were his two pieces. And so he thought if he could have the moral influence of Christianity with some sort of business that would supplant the slave trade, that would outgrow that, that it would completely change the landscape there. Unfortunately, the slave trade grew so quickly and became so violent that he found it really didn't work in practice, although, you know, in some ways we see that as still being extremely relevant today, that he needed to develop justice systems first to end the slave trade. But then I think his idea of Christianity and commerce really had a strong place after that. And we see that even today with microloans that are helping to change how Africa functions.
People seem to follow his exploits, what, through the newspapers, where they would print up stories and articles and journals about that. But he lost a lot of popularity. I mean, I was surprised. He couldn't walk the streets of London without crowds following him for a while. But that changed, didn't it, for time?
It did. You know, he became a hero to all of Britain after his first trip to Africa. He spent about a decade there as a missionary, and he ended up doing incredible things that were above and beyond the typical missionary call. He walked across Africa. He was the first person to do that. He crossed at one direction and turned around and went back to the other coast. He was the first European to see Victoria Falls and named it in honor of the Queen. And those things were incredible, and he was a hero. When he tried to go back on his next expedition to the Zambezi, his second expedition, he had these great, bold, grand ideas again, of things he would accomplish, and it all started falling apart on him. And when he returned after that expedition, he was no longer a hero. He was someone who had spent a lot of money on an expedition that wasn't fruitful. He had promised things that he couldn't provide, and it really, his life changed dramatically.
And so then he had to find a way to get sponsorship, didn't he?
He did, and he had a vision. The second expedition, although it's one that especially historians have looked at as a failure, it was really a critical turning point in his life, and it's been overlooked, it's been minimized. This is where he first saw the real brutality of slavery. And when he went, his initial inclinations of ending the slave trade were much, he thought, we just need good commerce. We need Christianity and commerce. Well, when he went back in the second time, it had gotten so violent, it became so violent that he really came back to England with a new determination to see an end to slavery. And he was, since he was this fallen hero, he had trouble raising funds and had trouble mounting another expedition. And so what he launched was a publicity stunt in many ways. He decided that there was this growing debate at the time about what was the source of the Nile.
Yeah.
It was this huge geographical question. People had believed for centuries that there were fountains in Central Africa that were pouring out this mystical, magical river that had been the lifeblood of Egypt and so much of the world. And so he went to settle this debate. He thought if he could find the source of the Nile, that he would once again have the platform and the prominence upon which to speak to the ear of the people and the ear of the government about ending the slave trade.
This parallel that you keep referring to, and that he did too, this business of commerce, economics, and Christianity or religion. How successful was the Christianity part, the influence that he might have had there?
Well, I think, and when you look at it now, a century later, I think it's incredibly successful. He wasn't the typical missionary who was preaching in places.
Mm-hmm.
He would go and more lead by example and live a different life than the slave traders who were the other contact with the outside world. Now, today, if you look at East Africa, it's predominantly Christian.
Yeah.
It's very vibrant. The faith there is incredibly vibrant. There are colleges and churches and schools and cities that are named Livingston. People, you'll meet people on the street who their first name is Livingston.
Hmm.
And this is a reflection, I think, of the value that he brought in the long term by his example. He left a mark that will forever be on East Africa.
And there didn't seem to be the sense of exploitation in that part of Africa as perhaps was seen through the imperialist colonialism that happened in other parts of Africa.
Well, that's right. It was also a time when Britain was trying to decide if they were going to colonize or not. And they'd had so many colonies that had spread throughout the world that it became almost unruly, and they had riots in India and various
mm-hmm.
places. Livingstone wanted to colonize, but not in the term of sense of this imperialistic idea. And that's another reason he's given, kind of received a bad rap by historians, because
mm-hmm.
they see him as an imperialist. And he had no intention of really expanding the British Empire. He felt like colonies, so to speak, were in some sense the only way to establish effective trading posts and effective places, outposts for Christian commerce to happen. He tried with setting up these sort of transient mission outposts, and it didn't have the long-term effect that he was looking for. But it wasn't an imperialistic vision that he had for Africa.
Some of these broad concepts that you're talking about, you can see parallels today, can't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Religion, economics, influence, it's still happening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we see his effect. And one of the reasons I see this as such an important story for us now, again, is we're facing a lot of these questions. How do you deal with human trafficking? How do you deal with Joseph Kony and the LRA in Central Africa,
yeah.
right? I actually believe that some of the chaos that we saw with the slave trade, that Livingstone saw, I mean, it's happening in the same places where Kony's men are running amok,
mm-hmm.
in the places in the Democratic Republic of Congo,
right.
where it's just a nightmare. And prior to the slave trade, it was really rather peaceful. And I think that something started with that horrific process of removing people, extracting people, and the slave traders would try to pit different tribes against each other in order to have them capture slaves or burn villages for them. I think that we're still seeing the repercussions of that today. And we need Livingstone's example of how to advocate for these things, how to get people interested and impassioned to see an end brought to them.
Now, various Christian groups still send missionaries to Africa and other parts of the world. What can they learn from either what was done right or what was done wrong in the 19th century?
Well, there's a lot to learn from Livingstone. He, admittedly, he's not necessarily a great leader. Of people all the time. He makes a lot of mistakes in how he handles them. And that's one of the things that I like about him as a character, is that he's complex. He's very... there are a lot of parts to him. And he changes a lot, even through the story, in how he sees himself. He struggles with, this question of fame. He had fame. He lost fame. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What does he do with it? And so I think that there's a lot to learn on how not to lead people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's much more to learn in how to be culturally sensitive, how to operate, and how to speak to people in a way that builds their trust, that is meaningful, to develop programs, to advocate for programs or causes in a meaningful way that builds people who want to join.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. In fact, I've got a daughter that's going as a student missionary to teach English in Thailand in the beginning of next year. But this whole idea of, in the past anyways, this close parallelism between trying to make people in other cultures little Americans seems to still be a struggle.
And Livingston had an issue with dealing with that. I think he would try to learn the African languages. He actually struggled with English when he came back home because he'd spoken these African dialects. He would leave gifts. He would live like they lived with people. And they saw him not as an outsider, but really as a brother, which was interesting. You know, in some ways, he really set a model. And one of his famous phrases is that he wanted to live like Jesus, who was a model missionary sent among men. He was our first missionary, and that was his guiding philosophy. In some ways, is how can he be a missionary like Jesus was sent? In some ways, as a missionary to us.
Yeah. What? Explain to our listeners the format of the book. I like what you've done at the beginning of each section or each chapter. Describe that a little bit up at the top of the page, of the first page. What's happening there, and how does that set the tone for what is being written there?
At the top of the page, I'm typically listing the size of and scope of the slave trade. One of the challenges, I think one of the unique pieces of research in this, is that there wasn't much documentation on how many lives the East African slave trade had lost. And so I spent a lot of time trying to research, find some credible numbers. And that was one thing that Livingston was trying to do with his time in deep in East Africa, was try to estimate the scope of this. How many, in order to tell the world and the government, this is a huge problem. So one thing I wanted to share, to give the readers a size of, is that this is you can see the growth.
Mm-hmm.
See how many people are being affected and changed and lives that are lost by this horrific slave trade, and then able to see Livingston's impact too, and how much it decreases after his advocacy.
At the end of the book, you have a section called Study Questions. How do you picture that being used?
Well, I know of several book groups and study clubs that are already starting to take this book on. I think this is such a complex story, and there are so many facets of this that are applicable. I've just received a note from a friend who works in an organization in D.C. dealing with government relations.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much with government relations. There's a story, there's a lot to be explored in this about missionaries that are just going to teach English in Africa or Thailand or wherever it may be. There are stories for people who are interested in ending human trafficking in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there are a lot of questions for us to explore about his character, about his leadership, about what was happening at the time. And I hope that those are used by people to think about the story, to spark a conversation, and for groups that want to get together and use this as a book to move through together and to debate and talk about and judge for themselves whether Livingstone should be someone who stands among our heroes, or whether we should see him as a positive character, or rethink the criticism mm-hmm. that's been heaped on him by biographers in the last several decades.
The book is The Daring Heart of David Livingstone: Exile, African Slavery, and the Publicity Stunt That Saved Millions. It's by Jay Milbrandt. Jay, where can our listeners get a copy of this book?
Well, wherever books are sold. I was just in Barnes & Noble last night. It came out on Tuesday night, I suppose, which is was our release day, and mm-hmm. there were already several copies on the shelf there, waiting for a good home. I know a lot of people were buying them online through Christian bookstores and through Amazon, and so anywhere that it's sold, you can get a copy.
Great. Jay, thanks for being with us on LifeQuest.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to LifeQuest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff.